a nice sounding voice telling people that it's fine to mutilate children's genitals and that it's okay to murder children in the womb.
Yeah, Mary was pro-abortion, by the way.
That's hell. That's not nice. That's hell.
Welcome to the Stand Firm Podcast. We're recording this episode on Tuesday, March 17th, 2026. I'm Nick Lannon of Grace Anglican Church in Louisville, Kentucky, and I'm joined today by Matt Kennedy of the Anglican Church of the Good Shepherd in Binghamton, New York, and J.D. Koch of Holy Trinity Parish in Hillsdale, Michigan. Gents, how are you today?
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, great, Nick. Thanks.
So I can't decide, is the story of the dean of the Episcopal Cathedral in Pittsburgh being arrested for shoplifting baseball cards from Walmart really funny or punishingly sad?
I mean, when I first heard it, I thought it was funny. But then the more I've learned about it, it's kind of sad, actually.
I think it's sad.
Yeah.
I mean, full disclosure, I know the guy. I mean, not well, but he was the chief of staff at Trinity some years ago as I was on the board. And, you know, we objected to him, or at least I objected to him leaving Trinity for the Episcopal Church, and certainly wouldn't wish anything like this or whatever scenario came about that caused him to be in this situation is heartbreaking, I think, you know. But I agree with you. Initially, before I knew the name and before I knew everything, I was like, oh, you know, what did an Episcopalian do now? I mean, you could insert whoever if you wanted.
Kind of refreshing, you know, like, this isn't sex. This isn't like, he's not.
Right.
Children.
He's wearing fully cleaved. He's right? Fully clothed. Yeah,
that's right. And like, right. But no, I think the more that comes out with the selling of church property and sort of the sting operation with the chalices was really. It's funny. I just was down in Charleston at Mere Anglicanism, and we stopped into one of the silver stores, just as one does in Charleston, and just kind of struck up a conversation with the lady and mentioned that I was a priest in the diocese. And she told me this long story about the St. Philip's chalices that had been stolen, and through a network of, you know, silver, I guess, Episcopalian adjacent silver dealers, they recovered them. And, you know, because it was suspicious, like, you know, what is this St. P 1823 on the bottom or whatever? Of course, at St. Luke's, when we, our chalices had been stolen back at St. Luke's and ended up in some pawn shop in Philadelphia or something and were returned long ago. But it's heartbreaking, though. I don't take any joy in that.
I mean, it being the year 2026 and him being a relatively young man, he is right in the zone for online gambling addiction, which is just running rampant through young men of that age. It's just a really terribly sad thing.
Mm. That's not it.
Well, there's no good transition to a topic of the day. We've been neck deep in Anglican specific stories for a while now with the G26 conference in Abuja and the reactions to it. So we thought we'd come up for air a bit and talk about something with a bit of a wider cultural impact, even though we might be a week or two late to the game. Texas State Representative James Tallarico has been in the news a lot recently. He's running for the Senate, but he's doing so as a loud and proud Christian candidate from the left. He's been on podcasts, TV shows, and more, talking about how he's a Christian and how it's led him to all his leftist policy positions. Now, Tallarico, it seems to me, is on the other side of that winsomeness coin that we've been talking about for a long time. We've said many times that winsomeness from the right can't alone successfully push the culture in a biblical direction. Tallarico seems to be doing the inverse, using winsomeness to push an anti-biblical agenda. Is he being more successful in that? What do you make of the Tallarico phenomenon?
Well, he's certainly fleshing out pseudo-Orthodox conservative people, because, you know, people like David French, Mike Cosper recently hear him, and they both have said, this is someone who models Christian decency in the public square in a way that people who are, you know, I guess they contrast him with MAGA. And I don't consider myself MAGA or whatever, but I think what they mean is he's nice. He's a nice person. And it kind of exemplifies what we've been talking about for a number of years, is that tone or niceness has really replaced Christian virtue on the part of a lot of people who are in the winsome crowd. so that if you, it doesn't really matter what you say, if you can say it in a compelling way that makes you seem very compassionate and nice, then that's good.
And are
So
willing to
you
call yourself a Christian.
and are willing to call yourself a Christian, right? Because that makes Christianity look good in the public square. If you can win the compassion appeal, that's why the what's what were the Super Bowl ads? The
Oh, he
That's
gets
us.
us.
he gets us. That the same thing, right? So it was pure progressivism and theological liberalism, but it was couched in niceness and using the name Jesus. So that was every even very even people who consider themselves or would say that they are conservative Christians thought, well, why can't we be like that? Well, why aren't we as appealing in our public face as they are? And I think though it's a very contemporary cultural type of thing because tone was not that important, or at least as important as it is now in past ages. I've been studying, I'm leading a Christian education a series at my parish on ancient heresies. And part of that, of course, is reading like the apologists, reading Athanasius, who was the apologist against Arianism, and Justin Martyr and others, and Tertullian. My goodness. I mean, if these people had social media accounts, it would be,
Yeah.
if you were to put Athanasius into a time machine and put him forward and say, here's your X account, Athanasius. I want you to tweet against Arius. He would be spot. Mike Cosper would be writing articles about how awful Athanasius is. David French would be publishing his Sunday columns about the evil of Athanasius and why, because he's so mean and he's turning people off from the Christian faith. Because what they recognized, Athanasius and others recognized, is that this is life or death. Truth is, right? So this is about the eternal life of souls and ultimately bodies. So that a nice sounding voice telling people that it's fine to mutilate children's genitals and that it's okay to murder children in the womb,
Yeah, Mary was pro-abortion, by the way.
that's hell. That's not nice. That's hell. And Athanasius would have recognized that immediately, as would any of the other apologists. That's hell. But we are so blinded by the, I don't know what it is, the tone, niceness, empathy, whatever it might be. We are so blinded by that we can't see truth from error anymore.
Well, and I
And
just don't. I
yeah.
don't buy it. I think it's disingenuous. I mean, like all of the leftists platforming of quote unquote Christians, it's all disingenuous because there's a couple of things. First of all, if he had any contrary point to his stated platform, anti-abortion, anti-trans, anti-immigration or illegal immigration, like whatever the case is, that was put out forward as an equally winsome package would be decried without fail immediately as, if even they would write, look at the new MAGA technique of a winsome, kind package of these hateful ideas. Like it's just, I mean, it's just disingenuous to think that the substance of what he's saying is not actually what they're supporting. Now, in addition to that, the idea once again is flouted that somehow Christian nationalism is only on the, as it were, the quote unquote right. Because again, you have a politician grounding and rooting his political convictions in his Christian faith, which I don't fault him for. I mean, I disagree with, I don't think that's not a, these aren't Christian positions to hold. But nevertheless, we have that given also a huge pass in the online, at the very least online, if not the sort of
Not a
mainstream media
pass, a
discussion.
pat on the back.
That's right. So somehow, we've seen this forever. And that's why it's just, I don't know who they're talking to. I mean, maybe just the multiplicity of repeated phrases will ultimately drown out opposition. I don't know. I mean, that is a technique. But the idea that somehow this doesn't represent, just from a leftist perspective, the very thing that we have been sort of excoriated for and decried, has been decried for the past, well, 10, 15 years as being quote unquote Christian nationalism. is laughable, because once you know what we have here clearly is a guy who's unabashedly saying, as a Christian, these are my political convictions, and so insofar as that goes, good on him. But the idea that that's not the same thing that's being decried on the opposite side, if you object to the outcome, is laughable. And so I don't know what really to do with it other than to just continue to point out the double standard or the lack of integrity and the pass or the platforming he's getting over against the disdain that other Christian quote unquote politicians are receiving. But yeah, I mean, so that's my initial take on the whole thing is that yes, there might be something to this kind of a winsome, articulate, sort of kinder, gentler political face. Okay, so insofar as that goes, like maybe I prefer that over a loud, strident, kind of obnoxious face. Of course, those are on both sides of the aisle, to be sure. But the idea that somehow it's not because of his positions that he's getting platformed, and it's actually because of the way that he's saying that, it's just false. It's just not true. Because, I mean, we could craft someone online, an AI avatar who would check all the same boxes, who would come out swinging against abortion, against illegal immigration, against trans and kids, against socialism, whatever. And they would be doxxed immediately, and then banned from all polite discourse in their various clubs that they would hoping to join. So anyway, that's my initial take on it, is that I don't buy it. We've seen it before. It's a tired playbook, and it may work, but hopefully, when it gets down to the truth claims, as you pointed out, Matt, that the abhorrent and frankly demonic ideas that he's putting forth as quote unquote Christian will be exposed for just what they are.
What do you guys make of the claim that it is high hypocrisy for a Christian to, say, vote for or potentially even support a Trump presidency while suggesting that James Tallarico is unfit for office? It seems to me that, I mean, I know that there are some people who voted for and continue to support Trump without holding their nose, but I don't know any Christians who say that he is a paragon of personal righteousness. I do know some who say that though he's not, they support what he's trying to do in the government. Whereas Tallarico may be a paragon of Christian niceness, but I refuse to disconnect policy from character. If you support the murder of unborn children in the womb, that's a character issue.
That's
Well,
right.
I think, okay, so I understand that position because I used to hold it back in 2016. I did not vote for Bill Clinton, and I thought because of his sexual dalliances in the White House, right? So he was an immoral president, and my position then was, if you're going to lie to your wife and lie to the whole country, we can't trust you as our president. And so I thought, character matters was the motto back in those days. So when Trump comes along, right, and then he's, obviously, what, how many wives has he had? How many affairs? I mean, obviously, he's not morally upstanding when it comes to his personal private life. It does. I can see how you look at that and say, man, this is just hypocrisy for these Christians who were anti Bill Clinton because of his immorality, now deciding they're going to vote for Bill to, for Trump despite his immorality. Okay, so I understand that, and I think maybe there is some validity to that criticism. However, if you really think about what's at stake, and I know this is okay, I'm gonna break Godwin's law. I hate Godwin's law. It's not really a law. I don't care.
Oh, who's the Nazi
Been a
now, Matt?
while. It's been a
I don't
while.
care. I don't care.
That's right.
I don't care. So,
Wait, the
but
moon is also made out of
if you were
anything the moon
to
in.
Goebbels and Himmler, for that matter, Hitler himself actually had pretty puritanical private lives. They weren't like going around to houses of prostitution, and I guess Hitler was a drug addict, but that wasn't his fault.
Yeah, you need to read Blitzed, the book Blitzed, to talk about all the
Yeah,
drugs the Nazis are on.
that was his doctor's fault, but that wasn't his. He was wrong. But Himmler was very puritanical in his personal life, as was Goebbels. And yet they were so let's say you have a Himmler Goebbels ticket, right? Very moral. They want to kill all the Jews, but they're very moral. Like they're personally, they've got personal virtue. They just want to murder the Jew,
That's right.
but they're personally virtuous.
They speak
So then you
Hochdeutsch,
have a
right?
guy, and on the other side, you have someone like just a pot smoking, whoring kind of guy, just totally profligate, but he doesn't want to kill the Jews. Right, if he gets in power, he's gonna do what he can to stop the Jew killing. So who does a Christian vote for? And I would say, let's vote for the profligate who's going to stop the killing of the Jews,
That's
and
right.
instead of the Himmler and Goebbels who are going to kill the Jews. That
Well,
so
that's
I
a
think that's the
calculus.
calculus that a lot of people come down. Yeah,
For sure. I mean,
go
that's
ahead.
a calculus I said explicitly in a class. I think I even did it back in 2016 about the case for voting for Trump. And I've made all the caveats of, you don't have to. Like, there's all sorts of arguments against it. And I'm not, I was like, that being said, this is the platform of the Democrats. And here's a list of Supreme Court justices that Trump has at least vetted and, theoretically is going to choose from in the hopes of overturning Roe versus Wade. I said, well, this is just a calculus. And I think to your point, Matt, that somehow along the way, and perhaps it's modern or perhaps it's just part of our itchy ears, that we've somehow disconnected the morality of political positions over against, for lack of a better word, a winsomeness or a tone or a style. And to your point, some of the most, nefarious characters throughout world history have been silver tongue, kind of very winsome and
Like
kind of.
Satan himself for
That's
one.
right. That's right. Well, I can't help but be reminded, there's an anecdote back from the Episcopal Church. I mean, you think about like Bishop Spong, Bishop Spong, I never met him in person, but I listened to hours of his lectures, and he's got this beautiful, Richmond accent, and he's, can navigate a cocktail party in the halls of elite culture as well as anyone. And at the same time, he's leading people to hell through his rank heresies as a bishop. And so you're like, maybe some point along the way, you should prioritize what he's actually saying over against how he's saying it. And I think that's a challenge. For some reason, I don't find it to be that difficult. Obviously, we don't, this is, I mean, I'd like to think that we were likable people. I know that our listener is rolling his or her eyes at this point. But, so far, so good, at least in terms of my circle of close friends. Like, I haven't driven them away because of my, awful sort of social manner. That being said, I still don't find it that difficult to differentiate between somebody's attitude or even their lack of social graces and their convictions, and would like at times for people to have a little bit more, for lack of a better word, winsomeness when they're presenting particularly a cause that I champion. But at the same time, if they have a platform and they're saying something that I think is true that needs to be said, well, then I'm going to have a lot of leeway as to how they say it and how they comport themselves over against someone who, like a snake oil salesman, or to use the old image, someone that can charm people with their rhetoric and their sort of subtlety, but at the same time are actually preaching and teaching lies and heresy. And so I actually don't think it's. I don't think that people are being swayed by him to the extent that it is being reported. I think that they want him to be swayed. It's like when Pope Francis became Pope, it was all of a sudden he was finally the Pope that the New York Times could get behind. I think that there's such a aspirational to the unbelieving culture despisers that perhaps this could be the type of Christianity that we could all get behind, because essentially it's just baptized, or not even, well, maybe it's technically baptized progressivism. But I don't think that people who really pay attention, now maybe that's a whole nother conversation, how many are and who is, but if you actually listen to any of his statements, then if you're a Christian, you must have some red flags, even if the other candidate has some drawbacks as well. But at the end of the day, we're making a calculus, like which of these often two candidates is making more of a moral compromise that I would have to support than the other. And I think that gets down to questions of abortion, questions of government, questions of human dignity, and all the things. And we've, at least I've decided to weight those questions much more heavily in my calculus than, excuse me, than the personal failings and moral culpability of the exponent of those ideas, because ultimately what I'm voting for is his his votes and his signing or not or lack thereof of policies and laws. And if they're in accordance with what I believe and hope for the government to do, well, then that's going to be nose held or not a position that I support.
He seems to me, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think that he's as popular as people would like him to be. Like, I think the media would like him to be as popular as they want him to be. He seems to me more like a dollar store Jimmy Carter. Like the kind of here's the new Christian, politician who's going to champion all, like you say, all of our leftist causes. But he's not as good as Jimmy Carter, right? He's not as slick. He's not as actually probably sincere as Jimmy Carter was, and not as, of course, not as Christian. Although Jimmy Carter apostatized later, but.
Historically understood to be the greatest president of all time, Jimmy Carter,
Right.
as we know, as we
Right,
know
right,
it, in every list of the worth its name.
right. One of Tallarico's most famous lines is that God is non-binary. And I feel like there has been some real gaslighting happening with the response to that line, which is that when some Christian reacts to it and says, that it's awful and heretical, etc. The response seems to be, what are you guys talking about? It's obvious that God is not male or female. So clearly, what is the problem with James Tallarico saying that God is non-binary?
Because it imports and smuggles into that language an ideology, the queer theory ideology, which is when we the reason we say that God is not male or female is because he's in his essence, he is not material. So he can't, he's immaterial. His ontological being
He's not a human
is
at all.
impossible to have any kind of sex, right? He's the reason for sexuality is for reproduction, and God doesn't need to be. We're not Mormons, so that God is immutable, unchangeable, and so you're importing categories into our discussion about God that don't belong there. And that God made us in His image, and that both the male and the female human being have as are made in His image doesn't then mean that God is both a male and a female. He's neither. But he has embedded in our natures aspects of himself, one, some in the female, some in the male, that are both in themselves are his image, but also come together and give us a full picture of himself. So it's just a weird way of talking about this, and it's obviously an ideological attempt to insert queer theory into our theology, which is
Well, it's not even as it's more hold on, I'm gonna get it. It's stupider than that. Well, no,
that's a
it's
good one.
was I steel manning the argument? Is
yeah,
that
you're steel manning it. That's exactly right. You're because he's not making some sort of disconnected philosophical argument about the ontology of God. He's talking about God in those terms to give him permission to then talk about humanity in those terms, which
That's
is
right.
what's wicked and heretical.
Yeah, I mean, if
Yeah.
anything, we can be grateful that all he's doing is exposing the rot of the quote unquote mainline seminary, the mainline church. Like, this is pretty standard fare. I mean, I know we've run into it directly over the years. I've read books that have made claims, that sort of that make these seem tame, really. I mean, I've got a library full of half of them. And the fact that it's sort of like a new novel day, like a breath of fresh air, to our toxic, Christian nationalist dialogue or whatever the gaslighting is. It's just such a joke. I mean, again, we've been inoculated to it. We've lived in it for decades now. And the idea that this is something new is just laughable. I mean, this is the next iteration of the right kind of Christian. And all of the mainstream media and all of the unbelieving secular press is going to platform this guy, because if this is what Christianity is, then it's not only unoffensive, but it actually just baptizes all of our, ungodly convictions about the world, beginning with men and women, and just cascading down from that to all manner of ungodly ideas about the church, the family, and the state, And so I'm thankful to a certain degree because it's not only smoked out, or well, not only has it exposed once again the ridiculously heavy-handed play that is if we couldn't see through, again, when the New York Times editorial board gets behind a Christian of any stripe, it's like reach for your holsters, if not your, well, reach for your holsters. But also it's smoking out Christian, quote unquote, Christian people who are at least in theory being swayed by the winsome rhetoric of this, kind young man who, despite the fact that we may disagree with him about, oh, I don't know, every single aspect of Christian doctrine that he's saying in such a nice way that maybe we should give him a second listen. It's like, well, maybe not. And so I'm grateful for that in that respect because it's just another, real time parable of a real time watching of the parable of the sower, through this. Because if your roots are so shallow that you are won over by somebody's kind rhetoric when they're actually giving you poison and preaching and teaching lies, then your roots are not very deep. And I think that's just what we're watching. It's the continuation of the great sorting that's happening all throughout the church. It's like ultimately truth is either going to win or it's going to be denied. They will exchange the truth of God for a lie. And all he is doing is perpetuating lies in a winsome and sort of kind of palpable package. Again, I can't help but mention Schleiermacher almost every show, to the culture despisers, it's palpable to the culture despisers of religion. And it's like, well, we've been here before. And those churches, by and large, are no longer in existence because they denied the faith once for all delivered to the saints. And so, I'll be interested in watching who gets compromised in their qualified support of this guy, particularly given how unabashed he is in his promotion of these non-Christian ideas. It's not like he's even doing like, Clinton, back to your point, Matt, about safe, legal, and rare. That was a mantra that Christians could get sort of twisted up about with respect to supporting someone for abortion, if that was their mantra, like I'm against abortion, but I think it should be safe, legal, and rare. Like that's not even where he is on that. He's arguing that that Mary, given the choice to conceive Jesus or not, was the first pro-choice woman in the world or something. I mean, that's next level, I mean, he's got some gall, really. But of course, he's getting a lot of airtime and riding it out. And so we'll see what happens.
I mean, it's, I have, not to be redundant and go back to my discussion of this class I'm teaching, but in studying these ancient heresies, it's been kind of encouraging to see the pattern, like the pathology, because it repeats itself. So Gnosticism came into the church because Gnosticism was already a thing out there in the non-Christian world, and Christians wanted to find a way to bring it in. Or people who are in the church want to find a way to bring Gnosticism into the church. So let's, how do we baptize this idea? And that's really what that is a pattern that we're seeing. That's it, it repeats itself over and over again throughout the centuries. What is the culture doing? How can we make the church amenable to it? How can we receive what the culture is giving us? And you're still using the name Jesus to kind of cover it up. So this is what this is. It's queer, the queer theory is trying as hard as it can, and Christians who have embraced queer theory and want to embrace queer theory because they think it will give them cultural cachet are trying as hard as they can to incorporate it into the Christian faith. Same thing with abortion rights, feminism, all of it. How can we bring this into the church? We need to baptize this as justice. I'm not sure if you got it. Have you guys read Amy Peeler's book? I forgot the name of it.
Oh, yeah, I was just thinking about that. Doesn't she make a similar argument about God being, or Jesus being, at
Yeah,
least
so Jesus,
theoretically, trans or something like that?
right, because Jesus, his humanity was taken from Mary, so he doesn't have a human father. Therefore,
Yeah,
right,
Wheaton for the
he's
win once
both a
again.
male and a female at the same time, and she doesn't, I don't think she goes so far as to say, don't think she goes so far as to say that he is trans, but it does She uses that for her argument against pronouns for God. We shouldn't be thinking of God as a male.
Right.
Okay,
Yeah.
right. But that's that argument would not be made if the culture hadn't already been going that way. That the reason she's making that argument is because she wants to make Christianity more amenable to the culture, and this is constantly the fight that we have to refuse to do that, refuse to couch our language, to shape our ideas, to go back to the scriptures and reinterpret them according to whatever is the latest new thing in the culture.
If only some of the biblical writers had cautioned us against doing that.
Yeah, I know. If only that Jesus had warned us against the world that like the, if you've only said something like, if they hated me, they'll hate you
Really?
also. Yeah. What was wrong? Why didn't he have the foresight to give us that warning?
You're exactly right, Matt. I mean, I think this is why, the last bastion against tyrannical demonic overlords is the Christian claim, truth claims over against, all of these progressive ideas about humanity and well, about humanity begins there. And I think you're exactly right, is that this is another attempt and a long line of attempts to usurp the Christian moniker and title for progressive causes. And, by God's grace, it's not going to work. I mean, it's been tried and it's been found wanting, time and time again. It's just sadly, like with all ideologies, in the interim time, there's victims. Who is it? I think John Stone Street says, that ideas have consequences and ideologies have victims or something like that. Like something, and this is another, the number of sensitive young Christians who are probably not, well, they're not at our churches, hopefully, but in places where perhaps they're not being discipled against this type of confusion, are hearing this guy, use the Bible, talk about his faith, he's younger, he's winsome and all the things, and are going to be seduced by it is heartbreaking. I mean that because there is a cultural moment where for better or worse, particularly young men, well, I shouldn't say young men, but younger people, fall into one of two camps where they're like sort of constitutionally ready for a fight, for lack of a better word, or, terrified of being out of step with the prevailing cultural winds. And I'm just sad that this guy's gonna drag some unwitting, particularly young people, along with him for at least a while, and begin making arguments like Mary was pro-abortion and God's non-binary and whatever else he's saying. And so that's the reason why, despite his winsomeness, we can't give him a pass. I mean, I think all things being equal, you shouldn't cuss and be vulgar. I mean, I think, like what did Kurt Vonnegut say? People have a hard enough time listening to you. You might as well not cuss because it just gives them a reason to, right? And so I think, if I had to choose between two different representatives, I would certainly choose one that was articulate, winsome, and kind. But if it came down to a question of who's spouting lies versus truth, then I'll take whoever's speaking the truth. I mean, whoever, however he's saying it.
And I
So.
do think that there's a sense in which, and I know that we can all think of examples of non-winsome Christian people on the quote unquote right. But I think that some of the things that those people are saying, Stan Firm's own Matt Kennedy comes to mind, saying strong things on the internet, the content is imputed to the sayer as anger and wrath and non-winsomeness, when in fact, if you sit down and talk to a person, the angry, non-winsome people on the right are fewer and further between than I think the implication is.
Well, that's my point in the beginning, is like if this guy had the exact same package with the exact same mannerisms and intonation and everything and was saying anything along the lines of what we normally say, then he would be excoriated. There's no question. There's no question he would be. And in fact, they probably would turn that against him. Like, can you believe that this wolf in sheep's clothing like pretends to be such a nice, kind guy and yet is actually a hateful, homophobic bigot? That's why I just don't have any time for it, because it's so disingenuous. It's so obviously seen through, and it's a heavy-handed tactic that displays the utter contempt and disdain for thoughtful Christian people that the sort of progressive media has, like as if they think we can't see through this. And I mean, that's why, you know, we talked about it forever. Like, and as you said that, Nick, like, I don't actually know personally, present company included, people who hold to countercultural Christian ideas who are actually vulgar and caustic and dismissive and hateful and vile. Like, I just don't know who these people are. Like, I know people who, you know,
they would say Wilson for the couple of comments, for instance. But yeah, in but the like, main, Doug Wilson is totally accommodating and nice. He just chooses a couple spots here and there to be over the line on purpose.
Yeah, but if he is representative of the, and I don't agree with this, but let's just say for sake of argument that he is the worst, then I'll take that. I'll take that. And again, I don't agree with that. I don't have any problem with most of what he says, if anything. But I certainly think if he represents the counterpoint to whatever, or if he represents the edge of, or the manifestation of hateful Christian vitriolic, then I'll take that. I mean, I'll take that. So, because I just don't know who they're talking about, you know. But you know, maybe I haven't met everyone in the world, so I'm sure they're out there.
I just think the whole conversation is skewed. There's no biblical category for niceness. I mean, if you are John the Baptist, and you see Herod taking his brother's wife, you go after him publicly. And I'm sure if Mike Cosper or David French or any of these people were listening to John the Baptist go after Herod and the way that he went after Herod, they would say, "Can you not be? Why are you so mean? Why are you so angry, John? Why are you an Anglican?"
An Anglican. That's funny. Yeah.
Why are you so mean? The Bible doesn't. There in the scriptures, harshness toward false teachers, heretics, or the people who are defiant against God is never considered a bad thing. It's not. If you're angry because someone is leading people to hell, that's a good thing. And if you express anger in an angry way because people are leading other people to hell, that's fine. Not only is it fine, it's commendable. And that our
that's
world,
right. In your anger, do not sin, Paul says. I mean, there's still our capacity.
If the church in our day cannot see that, the church is wrong. Or at least the people in the church who can't see that are wrong. Because that is the biblical model. The biblical model is you have no quarter, you pull no punches for those who are harming the Lord's little ones.
Let Amen. Me play devil's advocate here for a second, just because I'm sure our listener is wondering, what about the qualifications for elders and for deacons, where we are called to not be brawlers, we're called to be well thought of by outsiders, etc.?
Okay, in context, the not being quarrelsome, that would be like stirring up strife where there's no cause for it. Like, so if you're in a church where there's no heresy being taught, there's no one leading anyone to hell, and you just want to start fights over small matters, of course, right? Yes, that's what that's about. But that doesn't mean treating wolves as if they're sheep. That's
right.
It's a category confusion when they apply that to people who are opposing false teachers or people who lead people astray. As far, what was the other part you said? Well thought of by outsiders. Right. Well, okay. You got to balance that with what Jesus said about us being hated by the world, right? So if they hated me, they're going to hate you. So the fact that the world hates us doesn't mean that we have a bad reputation. The reputation has to be measured by what the scriptures say. So if the world hates us because we're doing what Jesus would have us do, that doesn't disqualify us from ministry. If the world hates us because we're being just jerks, okay, that would disqualify.
Well, in 1 Peter 3 talks about, you know, in being prepared with a ready defense for the hope that you have, do it with gentleness and humility, and goes on to say, basically, I'm paraphrasing, but don't give them opportunity other than what you are saying for them to discount you. You know, so insofar as you are able, Paul says, live at peace, right? And so if you're being, and I think that's, criticism, or at least that's a criteria that we should all take under. Like, is someone mad at me because of what I'm saying and what I'm preaching, or is it just because I'm being a jerk? Like, I think that's a healthy metric to kind of run through, because we could easily live into, well, they just don't like me because I'm just speak the truth all the
Sure.
time. And it's like, well, maybe it's also because you're kind of unpleasant and dismissive and, cynical, or whatever the case may be. And so, but no, I agree with you, Matt. Like, the clearly we're going to be at odds with the world, and be prepared for the opprobrium that that brings. At the same time, to the extent that we can, we want to live, as it were, above reproach from accusations that would undermine our validity when we speak the truth. And so I think that's a challenge for Christian people in general, much less Christian leaders. But I don't think, to your point, Nick, that applause of the world is what that means when you sort of thought of highly by outsiders. I think it's that, you don't want to be embezzlement, arrested for embezzlement while you're also trying to preach sin, death, and redemption. So,
Don't steal baseball cards.
shoplifting at
Well,
Walmart, right?
yeah, that was too low hanging fruit right there to not wrap it up. So.
Well, on that note, that's going to be all the time we have for Stand Firm today. Thanks, as always, for listening this week. If you want to keep the conversation going, please be in touch with us. Rate and review the podcast on iTunes. Send us an email at mailbag@standfirminfaith.com, or you can join the Anglicans for the Gospel Facebook group. Thanks, as always, to J.D. Koch and Matt Kennedy. I'm Nick Lannon, and Lord willing, we'll be back next week. Until then, by the grace of God and Jesus Christ, we'll be standing firm.